Now, isn't it awkward when someone at a dinner party raises a controversial issue, like an ongoing dispute between two guests, which one guest would really rather not have that thing discussed in front of the others? The mood that follows can be just a tiny bit tense. That might be a reasonable way to describe the mood today in Phnom Penh, where an ASEAN conference, has ended its second day. Wednesday, Japan raised the issue of the long-running territorial disputes that it and other Southeast Asian nations have with China. China's maintained strongly that the ASEAN summit was not the place to discuss these ongoing disputes that it has with Vietnam, the Philippines, and Japan. However, US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has defied those comments. She's urged nations attending the conference to settle those territorial disputes, as she says it, without coercion, without intimidation, without threats, and without the use of force. The Chinese Foreign Minister Yang Yiche, who will be meeting with Mrs. Clinton at some point today, has said for his part that he'd prefer to settle the territorial disputes bilaterally. Watching on with great interest is Rory Medcalf. He's Director of the International Security Program at the Lowy Institute, and he joins us from our Sydney studio. Rory, welcome.
Hi, Jonathan.
Now, tell us a little about these disputes. First of all, the dispute between China and Japan.
Yeah, look, China has maritime territorial disputes with several of its neighbours. And in the case of the dispute with Japan, it revolves around some rocks and islands. They're not particularly hospitable islands in the East China Sea. Mm. And more importantly, I think the resource deposits that lie in the economic zone around those islands. So there's issues of territory, of economics, of energy, and of national pride at stake here.
We've had a bit of gunboat action around those islands in recent hours.
Yeah, I think there's provocative, sometimes coercive manoeuvring by the vessels on both sides. We saw a particularly nasty incident a few years ago where a Chinese fishing boat rammed a Japanese Coast Guard ship, and this led to all sorts of diplomatic crisis. And the risks are there as these issues go on, that one of these incidents will escalate into something worse.
You just need a momentary lapse of judgment, I guess, in situations with that sort of tension.
Yes, and there's an argument that there are going to be, I guess, rogues or cowboys in the forces of any of these countries who at some stage may do something a bit stupid or may overinterpret their patriotic guidance, if you like.
Better in general terms not to have military vessels squaring off at each other anywhere. Tell us, too, about the disputes that Vietnam and the Philippines are having with Beijing.
Well, in the South China Sea, some of the dynamics are quite similar. Again, it's about territorial differences. These maritime boundaries have never been agreed upon. There are legacies of history there. And there's also an increased focus on resources because of the discovery of large hydrocarbon deposits and the fact that these days, more than ever, countries like China are desperate to get energy from wherever they can get it. Fisheries, fishing is another big issue of concern here. And finally, there is national pride. There are strong domestic constituencies in all of these countries, including the social media crowd, you know, the hundreds of millions of social media users in China who are, spurring their governments on.
Now, it's an interesting issue at a place like ASEAN as to whether this is the appropriate forum for these sorts of disputes to be discussed. I mean, when you're talking about things like international boundaries, then it would suggest that a grouping like that might be appropriate, and yet the nature of the disputes are so intensely bilateral. I mean, how do these things, in what sort of forum do these sorts of discussions work best?
Well, the Chinese position is certainly that these issues should be resolved bilaterally, but that makes sense from a Chinese point of view because it's going to be the big player in any of those bilateral negotiations. And so the smaller countries naturally have an interest in bringing many voices into the conversation, a multilateral approach. Now, I think there is a good reason for these issues to be looked at in an inclusive forum like this ASEAN regional forum that's on this week. 27 countries right across the region, because this is not just about which particular country owns which stretch of water or the fish or the oil deposits therein. It's about the security of sea lanes that all of our economies depend very heavily on.
A lot of common interest.
Absolutely. Australia is one of the countries with perhaps the most deep and direct economic interest in the stability of these waterways, because our trade to China, to Japan, to Korea, it all goes through the South China Sea. And of course, China itself and other countries that are trading nations, increasingly India, Europe, you name it, all have an interest in these waterways remaining open and safe for commerce. So it's not really anybody's private quarrel.
Has Australia expressed a public position on these disputes?
Look, my sense is that the Australian view has been all along that it wants the parties to resolve the disputes, but that a simple bilateral resolution isn't necessarily the way to go. I think there have been some mixed signals about that from Canberra over the years, but I get the sense now that Australia is very much in favour of the position of most of the countries in Asia, and that is that there needs to be a multilateral solution. But more than that, I think there's a realistic sense in Canberra and elsewhere that these issues aren't going to be resolved anytime soon, and therefore what we need is to find rules of the road, mechanisms to manage the tensions, to prevent any of these incidents from escalating into conflict. I think that's actually where the focus has to be, rather than on this long-term legal challenge of defining the boundaries.
Surely if a forum like ASEAN is to be of any particular significance, this is precisely the sort of thing which should be its bread and butter.
Well, I think so. And the ASEAN Regional Forum was set up in the 90s by such, I guess, optimistic voices as Gareth Evans, for example, with the express view that it should be the venue for airing concerns and grievances about security in Asia before they escalate to crisis point. Now, if 15 or 20 years on, a forum like this has to sort of censor itself because one or two members are sensitive about the topics and claim that they're domestic issues, then it really is not only very depressing, but a sign that these institutions are not advancing very far. It doesn't bode well for the future order in Asia. And that's why I think it does make sense to at least keep the channels of communication open, to keep these issues on the table. The year that the ASEAN Regional Forum stops talking about the South China Sea is going to be a step backwards.
Does that dream of you mentioned Gareth Evans there, that sort of dream of the role of ASEAN ever really been realised, or is it too anxious about maintaining, you know, vital inclusions, of not trying to offend any key participants?
Yeah, I guess like any dinner party, there are multiple agendas at work, and the problem is that the host of the dinner party, which is ASEAN, the 10 Southeast Asian nations, they like a nice, placid, consensual sort of conversation. They don't want to rock the boat too much. Whereas a lot of the, more powerful, more important guests at the table, you know, including the United States, Japan, China and others, they want some meat. They want some meat on the table. They need big issues discussed, as long as it happens on their terms. And in China's case, the South China Sea is one of the big issues it doesn't particularly want on the table, but more broadly it does want to see the process work, and it can't afford to offend the host so much as to storm out if the conversation turns in an uncomfortable direction. So it's a pretty tense dynamic at these things, even if there are lots of sweet words on the surface.
How realistic is the possibility of China taking a big stick approach to these particular disputes?
Look, we shouldn't exaggerate China's coercive behaviour on these issues at the moment. I mean, there is a relative degree of restraint. We're seeing civilian law enforcement units. We're not seeing military forces being deployed to patrol the South China Sea. And if we saw the Chinese Navy moving in there in force, then yes, we really should be worried. However, I think there are deep anxieties below the surface simply because the power is shifting in the region. And let's face it, if you were Vietnam or the Philippines left to fend for yourself in a territorial claim with China, you know who would end up winning.
Do you think they feel isolated?
They are doing everything they can not to feel isolated, but that requires them to try to build solidarity with their Southeast Asian partners, some of whom, like Cambodia, the host of this week's summit, don't particularly want solidarity with them because they're much more beholden to China. It has encouraged the Philippines and Vietnam to reach out to the United States. We've seen quite an extraordinary rapprochement between Vietnam and its old adversary, the United States, in the last few years because of this area of common interest. So they're really trying every trick in the book, and I guess you would too if you're a small country next door to a big one.
Thanks, Rory. Rory Metcalf there. Director of International Security Program at the Lowy Institute, 6:45, 5:15 in the West, RN Drive, Jonathan Green with you. Coming up, the trouble and turmoil in the 2011 Miss Tibet pageant.